From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Ikeda Theater at the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's great to be here. It's great to be back in Arizona, particularly right now, as the Republican Party prepares to nominate a man who makes his home here. All right, a second home. It's important as the race starts to go national to spend some time in the candidate's home turf and talk to the people who know the candidate and know what it's like to be personally yelled at by him. Stick around, because later we'll be joined by the governor of Arizona, Janet Napolitano. She'll be here. Apparently, we found her demographic. But first, it's your turn. The number to call is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
How you doing? It's Brian Lowe from Maplewood, New Jersey.
Hey, how are things in Maplewood?
Oh, how aren't they?
Really? That's just the question, ultimately. That's not far from where I grew up.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Berkeley Heights, New Jersey.
Right up 78.
Yeah, I know. I hate to say this, but I'm actually curious. What exit are you?
Oh, come on.
No, I know. I feel cheap somehow. Or I should say, I feel cheaper.
That's true.
Welcome to the show, Brian. Let me introduce you to our panel. First, say hello to a performer and writer still on strike with HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, Mr. Adam Felber.
Hi, Brian.
Also say hello to a deputy editor at the Houston Chronicle and a fabulously popular blogger there, Ms. Kiri O'Connor.
Hi, Brian.
Hey, how are you?
Good, thanks.
And lastly, say hello to a comedian, writer, and director, Mr. Paul Provenza.
Hello, Brian.
Hey, Paul, how are you?
I was born to run. How about you?
This name.
Welcome to the show, Brian. Now, we're going to start you off this week with a special edition of Carl Castle's Countdown. We're calling it Super Tuesday Palooza. Three songs about the political news this week. Your job, explain who or what each song is about. Do that two times out of three. You'll win our prize. Carl's voice on your home answering machine, no doubt making promises he does not intend to keep. Ready to play?
I'm ready.
All right, Carl, what's first in your playlist?
Peter, it's a duet, and it's sung by two people who are linking hands and walking into the future together.
Wherever we go, whatever we do, we're gonna go through it together.
So what two people will be facing each other, I'm sure, with smiles plastered on their faces for at least the next few months?
I would think that would be Bill and Hillary Clinton.
Not quite. No, no. Interesting. I don't think they even pretend to be happy with each other anymore. No, that's not what I was talking about.
Well, you see, now that brings up an interesting point. It's very important to remind the public that Bill is not running for president.
That's true.
What?
No, you got it half right.
No, he's running.
Two people. We thought we'd get rid of one of them, but we still got both of them, at least for the foreseeable future.
Oh, well, Hillary and Obama, right?
Exactly, yes.
Hillary All right. Obama. All right. I wasn't sure if I was supposed to answer again.
You were. It was supposed to be over by now. Super Tuesday was the day when the music would swell, and Barack would bang in the church window at America's wedding to Hillary and shout, America, America, and then America would run back up the aisle and jump on the bus with him. Or, conversely, Hillary was going to show up at America's door and say, you complete me. And America says, you had us at universal health care. But no, the Democrats are just not ready to commit, it seems, so the battle will go on to Virginia and Ohio and Texas, Hillary taking some states, Obama taking others, until the nomination finally gets determined by the late July caucuses in American Samoa.
See, now I've got this image of, like, Obama standing outside America's window with a boombox over his head.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I think they'll all just say anything.
Yeah. It's
oh! Well played, sir. Well
Speed
played.
And accuracy.
Carl, what's the next big number?
Peter, it's an anthem sung by a man who's not used to being charming, but who's going to have to try.
So, who is the guy who's going to have to make some of the hardcore conservatives love him?
Oh. I've shout it out in the audience.
Now, you remember this was political news, right?
Right, right. Coincidentally, I haven't been paying attention this week.
That's good preparation.
Well, it wasn't a big week.
It's
yeah, it was
think,
what happened? Slow news week.
Dude, did you drunk dial us? Is that what's going on?
I think it's Huckabee.
No, he's actually the only other guy left at this point.
You're going to have to concede on this one, gentlemen.
It's John McCain, of course. John McCain. The presumptive Republican nominee has a problem. There is a good section of his own party that just hates him.
Right.
So this week, he journeyed to the heart of the hardcore conservative movement, CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference. It's held...
Cue banjo.
It's held in a gothic castle on a rocky, wolf-infested crag in Bethesda, Maryland. There, McCain, with his trademark, straight-talking, brutal honesty, sucked up to the right wing. He was enthusiastically cheered, but apparently, and this is true, the hall in front of him, with all those cheering people, intentionally packed with his own supporters.
Oh.
Actual conference goers were stuck in an overflow room watching him on video. They booed him lustily.
Really?
Despite being instructed not to.
No, well, see, I've got a whole problem with this. I mean, why does he have to go suck up to them? Shouldn't they be sucking up to him? I mean, he's the one who's going to be picking the ambassador to Luxembourg.
Well, but he knows that the staunch conservative wing of the party would prefer Hillary Clinton over him.
Well, there's actually some of them, Ann Coulter, a woman who keeps herself in her excellent shape by dining only on her own bile. She... No. She actually said that. She said she'd rather vote for Hillary.
Did.
She'd rather vote for Hillary because...
Yeah, there's a source for you.
Yeah, I know. But no, you're right. Actually, it's hard.
We're quoting Ann Coulter.
The conventional wisdom is he needs to unify his party. He needs to bring the right wing under... You know, back into the tent, so to seal up their support. It may have been a scripted moment, we're not sure, but he did burst into the kitchen after his speech and attempt to personally deport the guy washing the dishes. So, okay, Brian, you're one for two, but you still have a chance. If you get this one right, you'll win. Carl, what's the last big number they're playing in the smoke-filled rooms this week?
It's a song sung by a man who finally realized the inevitable this week, and he chose to bow out with grace and dignity.
Nobody likes me, everybody hates me. I'm going to the garden to eat worms.
So who announced this week he was dropping out of the presidential race because his sophisticated polling operation told him that nobody liked him?
Mitt Romney.
Exactly right.
Yes, Jersey.
Jersey. It seems so unfair. Here's a man who had everything you'd think you'd need to lead this great nation, a vast personal fortune, a willingness to espouse any position, and, of course, perfect hair. But no, Romney dropped out of the race on Thursday in the face of a poor showing on Super Tuesday.
Yeah.
People said that in his announcement that he was quitting was the best speech he's given. That's true. People have said that. Part of it, insiders say, is that there's a new freedom to say what he actually believes.
Well,
of course, now the challenge for Romney now is to recall what he actually believes. So far, he has recollected that he prefers the original Star Trek to the other versions and that he does insist on classic tennis whites for even informal game. Are we going to miss Mitt Romney?
We hardly liked ye.
I think we'll be able to see him hosting a game show sometime in the near
future. He does. You know, now that you mention
you know?
It, he reminded
the Joker's
me...
Wild.
No, it's true. He reminded me of no one so much as Wink Martindale.
Wink Martindale.
You're right. Carl, how did Brian do in our quiz?
Brian had two correct answers, Peter, and that's enough to be a winner.
Well done, sir. Congratulations.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye now. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Adam, the employees at the Walmart in Coos Bay, Oregon, might be jealous of the community of panhandlers that's camped out in the parking lot because it's been determined that when compared to the Walmart employees, the panhandlers, well, what?
Make more money.
Exactly right. Police in Coos Bay were responding to complaints about the panhandlers camped out in the Walmart parking lot, so they did a survey to find out who they were and why they were outside begging. Turns out it's because they make a nice living, up to $300 a day. which is about as much as some of the clerks working inside make in a week. The clerks inside Walmart.
Yeah, but taxes take a big bite out of your panhandling dollar.
You know, doesn't it really? The clerks who work in Walmart said, this is totally cool, because they get great perks, like they get little smiley face buttons for free, and they have the right to use the restroom up to 2 times a day for up to 4 minutes each time.
Huh.
And then the clerk started to blink the words, rescue me, in Morse code. Yeah.
Interesting side note about the panhandlers and the Walmart employees, very similar health plans.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Craig Bartley.
Hey, Craig, how are you?
I'm great.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from downtown Dallas, Texas.
Dallas, Texas. Beautiful town. It occurs to me that you guys in Texas are actually going to get a chance to play a role in the presidential election. You have yet to vote.
Even in the Democratic primary.
In fact, how do you feel about that?
Well, it's going to be, it's kind of an odd feeling. It hasn't happened in a long time.
What I'm going to say is if you or anybody else in Texas, your friends and neighbors, have ever wanted anything from Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, now is the time to ask. Craig, it is nice to have you with us. You're going to play the game in which you have to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Craig's topic?
Everything I needed to know, I learned in junior high.
Despite all the dirty looks from teachers and hours of detention we got, it turns out the skills we learned in eighth grade have actually served a purpose. This week we read a story about how sometimes childish behavior can play a handy role in adult interactions. Our panelists are going to tell you 3 stories of grown-ups facing tough situations and choosing to apply some good old-fashioned pubescent tactics. Choose the real story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
This is the one at which I am least accomplished, but I'm ready to go.
I applaud your bravery. Here we go. First up, let's hear from Paul Prevenza.
On a Northwest Airlines flight from Minneapolis to Philadelphia, James B. Levi was assigned a middle seat next to Mr. Mark Pfeffer, whom Levi referred to in court documents as grossly obese. His fat spilled over into my seat. I couldn't even breathe, he said. A full flight meant there was no other seat available. I decided to make his flight as uncomfortable as mine, said Levi. He held his index finger an inch away from his seat neighbor's face and chanted, I'm not touching you, I'm not touching you, for the duration of the 3.5-hour flight. Mr. Pfeffer complained to flight attendants who could do nothing to stop Levi's behavior. All they could do was point out that Levi was, in fact, not touching him. Pfeffer sued Levi and Northwest Airlines for assault and mental cruelty. The case was thrown out when 6'1", 160-pound judge Samuel Domsky declared to the plaintiff, well, he wasn't touching you. And Pfeffer was ordered to pay all court costs.
Not being touched at all on a flight. Your next story of a junior high school prank making a difference comes from Kiri O'Connor.
Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper is not known for his wackiness. Not the type of person you'd expect to know what noogies were. In one famous incident, Harper coolly told President George W. Bush not to call him Steve. So Canadians were surprised when they read about Harper's behavior on a visit to Bermuda. During a photo op with Bermuda's Premier Ewart Brown, Harper playfully grabbed Mr. Brown around the neck, ground his knuckles into Brown's distinguished scalp, and yelled, Noogie Patrol! Brown quickly recovered, playfully poking Harper in the midsection and telling him he had cooties. In a press release later, his staff challenged Harper's to games of capture the flag, freeze tag, and double dutch, followed by punch buggy with no backsies, jinx you owe me a Coke rules fully in force.
Stephen Harper giving a noogie, going a noogie patrol. Your last story of the tricks of adolescence playing a role in the adult world comes from Adam Felber.
In all the possible scenarios for the Israelis and the Palestinians resolving their conflict by fighting the enemy, engaging him, befriending him, negotiating with him, one solution that has never been on the table is mooning him. Until now, That's right. Outside Hebron this month, some Israeli soldiers pioneered the uncharted waters of Tuchus diplomacy by exposing their buttocks to a group of Palestinian shepherds. The daring negotiating tactic was caught on camera by a peace activist, and the impudent keisters were soon all over the web. All the soldiers involved were suspended this week, as it turns out that both Israelis and Palestinians can agree that sun-drenched soldier buttocks are neither kosher nor halal. Perhaps the offenders saw this as a solution to all the violence, a war downgraded to mooning, short-cheating, and the occasional wedgie, but no. Bottom line, the government has assessed their tactics and found them fundamentally wrong and spanked them for the sake of posterity. No ifs, ands, or buts.
All right. Let us review your choices, sir. From Paul Prevenza, the story of how an interaction on a plane involving a finger that just wasn't touching him ended up in court. From Kerry O'Connor, how Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper gave a noogie to the head of Bermuda, and I mean literally the head. And from Adam Felber, the story of how Israeli soldiers started a new phase in the Mideast crisis by mooning a bunch of Palestinians, which is the real story in the week's news.
You know, I have been studying odd news for two solid days, and I cannot. This is the one that always stumps me, and I podcast every week, and I am at a loss. So I'm going to guess the first story.
So you're rejecting the mooning of the Palestinians, you're rejecting Kiri's story, and you were going for the guy who sat there on the plane, pointing at the guy saying, I'm not touching you, for 3.5 hours.
Yeah, I think that's going to be my choice.
All right, that's your choice. All right, you chose Paul's story. Well, to bring you the correct answer, we spoke to an academic with some expertise in the area about this real eighth grade prank.
So mooning in the West Bank may be a positive trend if both sides can turn towards this kind of armpit insult. I'm personally going to keep my eye out for the possibility that cooties might be a game that Palestinians and Israelis start to play.
But won't that be an improvement? That was Ian Lustick, a political science professor at the University of Pennsylvania, an expert on the Middle East, explaining how eighth grade tactics might, in fact, improve things in the peace process. I'm so sorry, Craig, but as you heard, Adam did, in fact, have the real answer. You did not win, but you earned a point for Paul for his remarkable, annoying story. A lifelong pacifist, I would kill if that were done to me, Paul. So,
well, I have to tell you that as a longtime fan and I was at the taping when you all were at McFarland Auditorium here in Dallas, I'll take this loss and let Paul have my point.
All right. Well, thank you for being a gentleman, Craig. Thank you so much.
You bet. Thanks
Bye-bye.
For having me.
There's a moon out tonight.
And now the game in which we invite well-known and powerful people on to squander some time answering our questions. It's called Not My Job. Arizona has a tradition of colorful politicians. There was Senator Barry Goldwater, of course. In more recent years, Governor Evan Meekum, an auto dealer who ended up being impeached. And Governor Fife Symington, who, among other crimes against good taste, was named Fife Symington. Today, the august seat of power in Phoenix is held by Janet Napolitano, who, so far, seems frighteningly and suspiciously normal, at least by local standards. We're honored to have her with us. Governor Napolitano, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Well, thank you.
Isn't it true that Arizona has had more than its share of, shall we say, political mavericks, colorful figures reaching high office?
Arizona has a tradition of colorful politics. We're very independent people, independent thinking, and yeah, we've had our share.
Yeah. So is there a particular way? Because, you know, one of the things you notice about Arizona politics, you have rather extreme characters on every side. You have Barry Goldwater, you have Bruce Babbitt, all fond success here. Is there a particular Arizona ethos? Is there an Arizona way, if you will?
Well, no.
Okay.
and the ethos is Arizonans appreciate people being themselves, and then they vote accordingly.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have to ask the obvious question. Are you going to be the first woman president or the second?
Well, that's actually kind of interesting that you bring that up. because, as is well known, you came out quite publicly in favor of Barack Obama in the presidential race.
I did.
And obviously, the good people of Arizona take your opinion very seriously.
Oh, yeah. We could see that.
Yeah. So, I mean, did you do that because you were genuinely enthused about Obama, or do you want to, like, put Hillary aside so you can seize that mantle someday?
No, I really, I'm very enthusiastic about Barack Obama, and I just think it's time for a change in Washington, D.C.
All right. It does occur to me, though, I mean, everybody's abuzz, as well they should be, about the possibility of electing the first woman president. Is there a trick? I mean, it's sadly, in this country, it's a relatively new thing to see women elected in their own right to high office. Is there a trick to it?
I got more votes.
Really? That helps. Okay.
Just get more votes and you're in.
We were led to understand that Arizona doesn't provide a governor's mansion.
What?
That is true. That is true. I have the only gubernatorial condominium in the United States. But it's mine. I paid for it, so it's just fine.
Why not?
Now, do you run your condo's board?
No. You know, there are really hard jobs in government like being a governor, but the hardest job is being on your HOA. That's tough. That's hard politics. So, no, I don't
That's
do that
That's dirty
one.
Politics.
Yeah, that one I can't manage. No, I'll take governor over that.
Speaking of seeking other offices, if I'm not mistaken, you're term limited. You're in your second and final term.
I am indeed.
A tragedy for the state, no doubt. Oh, the audience agrees. But what can you tell us about your plans once you finish your second term?
Want to pay off my condo.
Really?
Yeah. Want to finish that. No, I don't really have any. Arizona's got a lot of challenges associated with it. We are the first or second fastest growing state in the country. A lot of growth, a lot of vitality, a lot of youth. And we're building big universities and big schools and bringing in high tech and other things. And
Shaq.
And that takes...
You're going to have to
And big basketball players, yes. Big basketball players. But I really haven't thought much beyond 2010.
Really? Do you think you're the kind of person... I mean, obviously, you had the ambition and ability to manage a great state. Do you think that you're the kind of person who'll need to continue to be in charge? Or can you imagine...
Can I imagine not being in charge?
Can you imagine not being in charge?
No.
There you are.
Good answer.
Talk about straight
talk. That's what I do. That could be good.
Well, Governor Napolitano, we are so delighted to have you with us. We have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
I had to sit around for a bleeping year with an 8-10 record in this bleeping league, and I mean, you'll not put me in that bleeping position again, or you will bleeping pay for it like you can't bleeping believe.
That, of course, was one of the great pearls of wisdom from legendary coach Bobby Knight. Mr. Knight, the winningest college basketball coach ever. This week he surprised the sports world with his sudden resignation from his position at Texas Tech. We're going to commemorate the great coach with three questions about his life and times. Answer two correctly, you'll win our prize. For one of our listeners, Carl's voice swearing like a sailor on their home answering machine. Carl, who is Governor Janet Napolitano playing for?
Now, the governor is playing for Laura Torche of Glendale, Arizona.
All right.
Here's your first question. Here's your first question. Bobby Knight, of course, is famous for his, attacks on other people. Most famously, he was fired at Indiana University after he grabbed the arm of some student who had the audacity to say to him, "Hey, Knight, what's up?" But there was one incident, less reported, less famous, in which he actually physically went after whom? A, the Purdue University mascot, which is a guy dressed up like a train engine. B, a member of the other team's marching band. Or C, a massage therapist who pressed down a bit too hard.
And I need to pick A, B, or C.
You need to pick one of those. One of those is the right answer.
Well,
he attacked one of those people.
I'll go with A.
You're going to go with A, the Purdue University mascot. Although I do like the idea of him punching a train in the face. No, the answer was the member of the other team's band. Bob McClellan of Rivals.com just wrote recently about how he saw Knight go after a member of the Northwestern University band in a basketball game during the 80s. Quote, "He literally tried to grab a young man and pull him over the railing as the Hoosiers left the court." All right, you still have two more chances. Last question, is it? I'm sorry, not
Next
the last question at all. Yes, thank you. We are
I'm here but to serve, you know?
We are a little bossy, aren't we, Governor?
Just trying to help you out there. Question number two.
Yes, I understand that. Thank you.
I think being good at math is an important thing for a governor.
I'm thinking, watch out, New Mexico. You're about to be annexed.
No, that would be California.
All right.
Some people were just born to be in charge.
That's true. All right, here we go. Okay. Next question. As it turns out, what may well be the last public tantrum of Knight's career will be the one that happened in February of 2004 as he had a public confrontation in a restaurant with his own boss at that time, the Chancellor of Texas Tech University, David Smith. What had Smith done to so infuriate Coach Knight? A, tell him he should probably stop wearing his Indiana University sweater since now he worked for a different school. B, compliment him on his public behavior in recent days and weeks. Or C, say, quote, this is Texas. Nobody goes to the salad bar here except to get the Jell-O.
C.
C. Oh, she just chooses that. No, it was B.
Ah! I'm letting Laura down.
You are, a little bit. But that's just one vote. According, you can't run again anyway. According to a detailed memo of the incident available on thesmokinggun.com, Smith says he wanted to compliment Knight on a couple of incidents in which Knight had actually behaved well in public. This seemed to make Knight furious for some reason. He started screaming at his boss in public, and the frightened chancellor ran away.
So much for the Red Raiders.
Yeah, one more question here for you. Just last fall, there was another little incident in which Knight got into a tussle with somebody while bird hunting. A homeowner complained that Knight was shooting at birds far too close to his house. How did Knight respond? A, Knight threw three dead birds over the guy's fence into his pool. B, Knight sicked his bird dog on him. Or C, Knight shot him.
I'll go with A.
You're going to go with A, threw three dead birds over the guy's fence into the pool. No, he shot him, of course. It's Bobby Knight. The man says he turned away. And keep in mind that Bobby Knight was far away. He says he turned away after shouting at Knight to move away from the house, and a moment later heard a gunshot, and then pellets hit his neck and back.
No
injuries, though. Skin wasn't broken. And the police never investigated. For his part, Knight complained that the guy swore at him.
No.
Yes.
No. The pot calling the kettle
black. Isn't it amazing? Carl, how did Governor Napolitano do?
Not good.
Not very well, Peters.
No.
No correct answers, so no prize for Laura Trochet.
This, though, I think this happens sometimes, and what I like to say is failure on our quiz is just proof that you, in fact, were destined for greater things. You know?
Oh! Thank you.
Janet Napolitano is the governor of the great state of Arizona. Thank you so much for being with us,
Thank
Governor.
You very
what
much.
A pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you, everybody. In just a minute, Carl will channel some voices from the week's news. If you'd like to play Who's Carl This Time, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. But first panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Paul, political scandal of the week, if not the year, the small town of Alice, Texas has lost their mayor. She had to resign after she admitted doing what? Wow.
Phone sex. She was having phone sex for $3.99 a minute because you got to raise money for the campaign.
No.
That can get you elected in Texas.
I know. I'll give you a hint.
That would be nice.
She's like the Cruella de Vil of Alice, Texas.
Ah, she made a coat out of Dalmatians. Now I remember the story.
That's not far off.
Actually,
really
she
not.
Did. Cruella de Vil never managed to make her coat. But in an attempt to make her coat, she did what?
She kidnapped
a
101 dogs.
You know, this so could, literal.
We could do this all night.
No, I'll give it to you. She kidnapped her neighbor's dog. And I want to stress to you that nothing I'm about to tell you is made up. Former mayor of Alice, Texas, Grace Sands Lopez, was asked to watch her neighbor's Shih Tzu puddles while her neighbors were on vacation. But the day after her neighbors left town, the day after, the neighbor called them and said, "Oh, I'm sorry, your dog died." 3 months later, the little dog, renamed Panchito, was spotted at a dog groomer, and the town was engulfed in scandal. The dog owners accused Ms. Sainz Lopez of stealing the dog. They went to court to get their dog back, but Sainz Lopez countered. She filed a police report and said, "Oh, sorry, dog's gone. Ran away. Don't know where the dog is." But then, an intrepid investigating TV crew, journalism at its finest, found Puddles slash Panchito at the mayor's twin sister's house. "Where'd this dog come from?" said the mayor's twin sister. "Oh," she says, "a stranger dropped it off here." There'll be a
then it turned out that the mayor didn't have a twin sister.
Oh, just a wig.
It was her evil twin sister.
There's going to be a trial in April to settle all this. Yeah. I expect it to be live, gavel to gavel.
It's great.
All I can tell you is Ellen DeGeneres is just bawling her eyes out.
Give Puddles back. Just give Puddles back.
Adam, after parents complained, Woolworth stores in Britain have stopped selling a line of young girls' beds that had what brand name?
Lolita.
Exactly right.
That word just trips off the tongue.
It really does. Yeah. Lolita, light of my life, fire of my loins, my sin, my soul, my daybed.
Yeah.
The Lolita midsleeper combi is aimed at six-year-old girls. It's a whitewashed wooden bed with pull-out desk and cupboard. Staff at Woolworth say they'd never heard of Nabokov's novel about a young girl's extremely inappropriate relationship with her stepfather. They said, quote, "We had to look it up on Wikipedia, but we certainly know who she is now," end quote. After further Wikipedia research, the company has decided to pull other products from their shelves, including the Hannibal Lecter Easy Bake Oven, sure, the Scarlet Letters Refrigerator Magnet Set, and the Catherine the Great My Little Pony Playset. Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but right now, though, it's time for Carl to recreate some voices from the week's news. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Carl from Montara, California.
Hey, Carl, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Now, where is Montara?
Montara is a little town on the coast about 20 miles south of San Francisco.
Oh, I see. So is that like near Santa Cruz or sort of?
No, it's actually 50 miles north of Santa Cruz. It's close to Half Moon Bay.
Oh, I see. It's lovely there.
It is.
Yeah, it's funny, though, because you're separated by the mountains from the main part of the valley. Sometimes you can see the money blowing over, though, when the winds are right. Well, it's nice to have you with us, Carl.
Thanks.
You're going to play Who's Carl This Time? Carl Castle will read three quotes from this week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, Carl will record the greeting on your home answering machine. Ready to play?
I am.
All right. Your first quote is from ESPN Page 2 columnist DJ Gallo. It's the first stages of grieving as experienced by the fans of a particular team this week.
Stage 1, denial and isolation.
No, 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 no! No, this did not happen!
Stage 2, anger. I have a freaking helmet tattooed on my head, on my bald head. I just feel so misled. I feel so stupid.
That's how the fans of what team may have been feeling this past Monday.
Would that be the New England Patriots?
It would be. Super Bowl 42 was a foregone conclusion. The New York Giants would come onto the field, immediately flip over to expose their soft white underbellies. And if the Patriots were feeling nice, they might have let them score a field goal, say, just to feel good about themselves. But instead, the Giants, led by plucky quarterback Eli Manning, did what no one else was able to do all season and beat the Patriots. Bookies in Las Vegas lost a record $2.6 million in the game. It became apparent that most of the country was actually rooting for the Giants. Mostly, it seems, because while America does love a winner, they felt that if Tom Brady gets Gisele Bündchen, he can let somebody else enjoy the lousy trophy. All right, Carl, here is your next quote.
That's what they do. They come upon you all of a sudden.
That's economist Bob Bruska. He was telling CNN that he and other economists are starting to believe that the U.S. economy may already be in the middle of a what?
Recession.
Right. So, the American economy, having a lovely evening at home, perhaps with its girlfriend, the Chinese economy, and the doors are securely locked, everything's cool, and then the spooky music starts up, and you realize the recession is calling from inside the house. At least, according to some economists, who say that the economy probably entered into a downturn last month when we were distracted by the beginning of American Idol. Most economists say there are things that could ease the pain of the recession. The Federal Reserve could cut interest rates again, or, and this is the best case scenario, Angelina Jolie could agree to adopt all of us. All right, very good, Carl. Here is your last quote.
There's no better place to spend my honeymoon than here at the Steel Mill.
That, as was obvious from Carl's accent, is a world leader who just got remarried after a brief but very public courtship, says he was happy to spend his honeymoon with his nation's steelworkers. Who?
Sarkozy.
Right, Nicolas Sarkozy. Here's more proof that France is just not like America. If the U.S. president publicly dumped his wife and then married a gorgeous former supermodel, he'd no doubt get support of more male voters who'd say, dude! Just like that, dude, four U's, dude! But in France, Nicolas Sarkozy did just that, got nothing but raspberries. In fact, the steelworkers he spoke to booed him. Apparently, the people in France are more concerned about things like their retirement benefits and unemployment.
What?
Oh, France, what has happened to a once great nation? The editor of a leading French celebrity magazine says that Ms. Bruni will make France proud. Quote, I mean, when she says yes to the president, she says yes to France. Or so they hope.
How does that work? Is that when you marry the president of the country, you marry everybody that voted for the president of the country?
Can you imagine that? Can you imagine the president of the United States divorcing his wife in office and marrying a model?
I just did.
And how does it feel?
Dude!
Well, it depends who Hillary married.
I guess so.
Fabio.
You know, all of a sudden it got... Fabio did endorse Hillary.
He did.
So maybe...
He did. I think that's going to happen.
She could do a little better.
That would be the best thing ever.
Yeah.
It'd be great.
Talk about easing the pain of the recession.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Carl, how did Carl do in our quiz?
Carl had 3 correct answers, Peter. So, Carl, I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Well done, sir. Congratulations. Thank you so much for playing, and congratulations again.
Thanks. It was fun.
Bye-bye. Now it's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players now has 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Adam Felber and Paul Provenza each has 2 points. Kerry O'Connor has 1.
All right.
I feel like Clinton and Obama.
I do, too. Which are you?
I feel like Huckabee.
All right, here we go. Kerry?
Yes.
Kerry, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. On Thursday, Condoleezza Rice made a surprise trip to blank to meet with Hamid Karzai.
Afghanistan.
Right. Baseball trainer Brian McNamee gave federal investigators what he said was physical evidence that blank had taken steroids.
Roger Clemens.
Right. Because its legality is in question, CIA Director Michael Hayden said that in 2006, he officially prohibited interrogators from blanking.
Oh, waterboarding.
Right. 80-year-old Thomas Monson was named the new leader of the blank church this week.
The Latter-day Saints.
Yes, exactly. The Mormons. Among the dumbest ever quiz show answers being considered by a British website was the one given by the person who, when asked what happened in Dallas on November 22, 1963, answered blank.
The Super Bowl?
No, he answered, I don't know. I wasn't watching the show then.
Oh. Oh.
Now that her visa request has been denied, blank will sing her hit Rehab on the Grammys via satellite.
Amy Winehouse.
Right, from Rehab, I presume. Saying Harvard is so hot, blank received the Harvard Lampoon's Woman of the Year Award.
Paris Hilton.
Right, because the warm winter could make their hibernating pets wake up too early, experts suggested that tortoise owners blank.
Put them in the fridge.
Exactly right. It's a growing problem. hibernating tortoises waking up months early and demanding hot water bottles, cocoa, secretly cranking the heat up. To prevent the problem, tortoise experts suggest simply stowing your sleepy reptile in the refrigerator. Said one expert, quote, if you open the door every day, they should get enough air. But you shouldn't go away on a holiday and leave them, unquote. Carl, how did Kiri do in our quiz?
Kiri had a great round, Peter. 7 correct answers for 14 more points. She now has 15 points, and Kiri has the lead.
Okay.
Well done. All right. We flipped a coin. Adam has elected to go last, so Paul, you're up next. Fill in the blank. Kentucky, Mississippi, Tennessee, and Arkansas were hit by more than 70 blanks on Tuesday.
Tornadoes.
Right. NASA launched the blank Thursday to deliver a European laboratory to the International Space Station. Yes. This week, there were accusations that Dr. Robert Jarvik used a more athletic body double in his ads for the cholesterol drug blank.
What the hell is the name of that drug? Lipitor.
Right.
Yes.
Ads with talking babies and Justin Timberlake going crotch first into a mailbox were among the most notable commercials shown during a blank.
Super Bowl.
Right. A columnist for the Texas Tech School paper was fired for plagiarism in 2 articles he wrote about blank.
Hibernating tortoises.
No. Plagiarism. According to the New York City Medical Examiner, an accidental overdose of prescription medication killed actor. Yes? You don't get any more points for saying that.
I know, but you keep up with me, will you please?
All right. Blank was quietly released from UCLA Medical Center on Wednesday.
Britney Spears.
Right. British scientists announced a breakthrough in that they were able to genetically create a mouse that could blank.
Become a Disney star.
No. Catch a cold. Usually, when lab mice are hanging around waiting for the next diabolical experiment, they say to each other, hey, at least we're immune from the human cold virus. Not so fast, fuzzball. Other than the sheer amusement of watching a mouse sneeze, why would scientists do this? The answer, they want to develop treatments for the cold and other respiratory illnesses in humans, so they need to...
What was that?
Yeah, they need to get mice to get colds to experiment. The mice were not pleased. One mouse was heard to say with a tissue against its nose, I'm going to peck you back.
Tiny tissue.
Tiny.
Well, it's especially bad because, you know, cheese and dairy is really bad for a cold.
Yeah. Carl, how did Paul do in our quiz?
Paul had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 14 points, but Kiri still has the lead with
all
15.
All right. How many, then, does Adam have to get right to catch up with Kiri and win the game?
7 correct
answers. Oh, my goodness. Here we go, Adam.
Okay.
This is for the game. Fill in the blank. On Thursday, the Senate and then the House passed the plan to stimulate the blank.
Economy.
Right. Police in Pakistan arrested 2 more suspects in the assassination of blank.
Bhutto.
Right. Benazir Bhutto. Blank said he would not quit the GOP presidential race and would try to get Mitt Romney's supporters.
Huckabee.
Right. Because of his vocal support for John McCain for president, Democrats stripped blank of his superdelegate status at this summer's convention.
Joe Lieberman.
Right. The website for Fox 5 in Washington, D.C. had the best headline of the week, reading, crack found in blank.
Man's buttocks.
Exactly right. Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, the guru who introduced the blanks to transcendental meditation, died Tuesday at the age of 91.
Beatles.
Right, Beatles. The Empire State Building was lit with yellow and red lights to usher in the Chinese New Year's Year of the Blank.
Tortoise.
No, rat. After a night of drinking, 2 men in Britain were charged after they attempted to blank.
Remove Big Ben's minute hand.
No. They were charged after they attempted to hitch a ride home on a dolphin.
Yeah, that's Jukes, not legal in Britain.
No, Michael Jukes and Daniel Buck needed a ride home, so when they saw a dolphin frolicking offshore in Kent, they thought, what the heck? They dove in, grabbed onto the dolphin's fin. Jukes and Buck were arrested for, quote, interfering with a dolphin.
By who?
They're arrested by the police.
A policeman on the beach? A policeman in the bay?
Riding a big manta ray.
This story is completely implausible.
It was Aquaman.
It was a sting operation. It was a stingray operation. I mean, how do you catch somebody in the dead of night in the water in Britain riding a dolphin?
Apparently somebody videotaped them.
Because cops were having donuts at Krusty's Crab Shack.
Oh, yeah.
Just as the dolphin...
A marine biologist said that a video clearly shows the dolphins were angry and happy with the pair. It was also more evidence in the case, the enormous fare the dolphin charged.
Yeah, well, they'll do that to you.
Carl, did Adam do well enough to win?
He needed 7 correct answers, Peter, but Adam had just 6 correct answers.
Oh, so close.
So, with 15 points, Kerry O'Connor is this
week's
champion.
Look at that.
Really nice.
Well done.
I'm just saying, don't count out Huckabee.
You know, I can't believe it's already the year of the rat, and I'm still writing monkey on all my checks. You know what's scary is that joke's actually accurate. It used to be the monkey.
I know. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists, now that he has ended his presidential bid, whatever will Mitt Romney do next? But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Kaufman, the foundation of entrepreneurship, celebrating entrepreneurs who start businesses and change the world, on the web at kaufman.org. The Annenberg Foundation, advancing public well-being through improved communication, on the web at annenbergfoundation.org. And the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, celebrating 10 years of support for the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. B.J. Liederman composed our theme. Our program is directed by Melody Kramer and produced by Mike Danforth and Emily Ecton. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Rana B. Now, panel, what is next for the Mitster? Mr. Romney, that is. Kerry O'Connor.
He's going to spend more time with his 5 impish adult sons, Tag, Craig, Tito, Jermaine, and Randy.
Paul Prevenza.
He's going to win an Academy Award for his new documentary, An Inconvenient Outcome.
And Adam Felber.
What do you mean, what's he going to do next? He's already denying ever having run for president.
Well, if Mitt Romney does any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you so much, Carol Castle. Thanks also to Adam Felber, Kerry O'Connor, and Paul Prevenza. Thanks to Bob Glazer and everybody at KJZZ, K-Jazz in Phoenix. Thanks to our audience here at the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Segal. We will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.